On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC, a community of solvers coming together in unexpected ways. It all adds up to the new equation.
2 minutes past 12 on Sundays on the Record. Gavin Riley with you for the next hour. 53106 is the number for your texts at a cost of 30 cent. We're also on Twitter. Our hashtag is OnTheRecordNT. As I said, checking in later this hour with Bernard O'Toole for the first of this afternoon's Premier League games to talk about all the weekend's action and that comprehensive start for Ireland yesterday in the Autumn Internationals. And we'll be talking to Donald Fallon about the forgotten presidential visit of a US leader to Ireland. And no, it's not Donald Trump's flyover in Shannon a couple of months ago. There is a presidential visit that you've probably forgotten ever took place, but we'll be looking back over that a little bit later this hour. But first, we're joined in studio by the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, TD. Minister, good afternoon.
Good morning, Gav, or good afternoon.
Thank you very much for coming in. The first thing I wanted to ask you, just because it's on the front pages of today's papers, and I know it's something which has been exercising a lot of people, is about the whole concept of testing and tracing in primary schools. And we learned today in the Sunday Independent that Tony Holohan has written to you outlining a menu of some options which are now up in the air and something which you might be able to consider. This is the first time we've heard of the CMO writing any such letter to you. So can you give us some guidance as to what's in it?
Well, there's an ongoing conversation between Minister Norma Foley, Dr. Holohan and myself as to using rapid testing for contact tracing. As you'll be aware, contact tracing in schools was stopped, and it was stopped very much in the interests of the students. Now, I know there are some people who disagree, and I accept that and I respect that view. The view taken was that based on the data is showing very, very clearly that there is infection, and the vast majority of that infection is happening in households. It's not happening in the schools. But what was happening was kids were being taken out of school for 10 days at a time, which obviously is very, very damaging. The infection rates, however, are going up. Mm. All of the data says they are not going up because of infections in the schools. They're going up because of infections outside
schools. Wouldn't it be
hard
to know that when you are no longer actively tracing clusters in schools?
Well, you see, we are still doing contact tracing, but the contact tracing is happening in households. But remember as well, the public health doctors, when there's outbreaks in schools, the public health doctors are very, very involved. So they do have a very good understanding of what's happening. And as I say, the data is very, very clear. The schools are low-risk environments. In fact, the recent surge in cases we've seen in those, say, from about 12 to about 25, so secondary schools, third level, a lot of that, from a time perspective, is actually linked to the midterm. So what we've seen consistently is when students are in school, cases are lower than when they're out of school.
And when they're out and about, that's then when they begin to socialise.
Well, that's the socialisation. That's when people meet in households. Well, but critically, Gav, for the teachers and for the parents and indeed for the students themselves, we are looking at how rapid testing can be used for contact tracing in the schools.
How do you square then the idea that the HPSC in its weekly report for clusters has identified fewer and fewer cases of those in primary age? In fact, for the last week, there was only four clusters linked back to primary schools. And yet the infection rate for those aged 5 to 12, who are those of primary school age, has effectively doubled in the last 3 or 4 weeks. In fact, in the last fortnight, one out of every 115 pupils of primary age has contracted COVID. And that's at a time when you are no longer doing active contact tracing inside the classroom environment. It seems as plain as all of our faces that the numbers have gone up once the contact tracing stopped down.
No, there's not a link between those two things. So the data is very clear. The cases have gone up. It's something we're concerned about. The cases have gone up very, very fast from about 12 to the mid 20s. And a lot of that is people who are either in secondary school or in third level. The data also says that the infections are happening outside of the educational environments. And as I was just saying, actually, the most recent surge is linked to the midterm when people weren't in school at all.
But the surge for those ages is not as high as the surge that there's been in those of primary age, which happens to coincide almost exactly with the change in policy.
I'd have to take a look exactly on primary versus secondary, but certainly all of the advice we have is that this is not a causal link at all. But nonetheless, there are cases arising. There has been a call for rapid testing to be used, and it is something we're looking at deploying.
Wouldn't it have been better to have all of these discussions and maybe to act when you had the benefit of a midterm break a week or two ago, rather than allowing people to come back into an environment which may have problems and then only deciding a week or two after they return to introduce new testing?
We see public health would flat out refute the premise of that question. The premise of that question is cases are being driven by them recommending stopping contact tracing. They would refute the premise of that entirely. And what they would say, again, is that the schools are low risk environments, the households are the higher risk environments, and that's where
the focus
is.
But nonetheless, if there's justification for a rethink, and if they've now written a letter to you outlining the various ECDC protocols or what you might like to do by way of instigating that, they must think that there is something to act upon, or they must think that there maybe is a case for you to change tack.
We do. And you're exactly right. So there's new ECDC guidelines on exactly these things. So, for example, they look at testing within pods, or if you get a certain number of positive tests within a classroom, that you could test everyone within the classroom. So these are exactly the things we're looking at right now.
How quickly won't you make a decision on that? Because there'd be a lot of parents who might like to know very quickly what sort of new procedures might be in place.
Yeah, there would. I can't give an exact timeline, but it's something we're looking at quickly, or something we've been looking at day to day, and it's something that I think we will move on quickly.
Without pinning you down, is quickly in the next week, next 2 weeks?
I prefer not to get into exactly what day it is, but what I want to see, and I know what Minister Foley wants to see, is that this is brought in quickly. Okay. And so we're working with the Chief Medical Officer, who is very open to it as well.
The other matter of some speculation when it comes to COVID at the moment is the rollout of more boosters for the over 60s. And we know that that's a slow process, which is beginning, but maybe there are some who'd like it to be beginning quicker than it currently is. And there's some pieces today, we already mentioned Luke O'Neill and Sunday Independent, who would like NIAC to sign off on this as a matter of urgency. Where stands that, or how quickly might we get a decision to roll that out more actively?
Well, it is being rolled out actively. So we're ramping up again to about 200,000 vaccines a week. So we're using vaccine centres, we're using hospital settings, we're using GPs, we're looking at how we can use pharmacies as well. So now it's everyone who's 60 and older. It's people who are immunocompromised. It's all healthcare workers as well. So we're currently targeting about 1.3, 1.4 million people. NIAC, as well as that, are looking at those under 60 who have underlying conditions. It's another one of the high-risk groups that we want to use. So it is being rolled out. It is being rolled out very quickly. With regards to the interval, which I think was the point of the article,
yes.
I think there were people saying, could we not move it from a six-month interval to a five-month interval? So I thought you might ask me that. So I double-checked NIAC's advice this morning, and actually NIAC's advice and the advice from the Chief Medical Officer to me, which I've accepted, is in fact a minimum of 5 months.
Okay. But then what about the argument that there are those who might have gotten that second dose sometime in the last 3 or 4 months? We're heading into a winter season, temperatures are down, respiratory viruses are up, and that there is adequate evidence from other countries that if you act quicker, that you could stem off a really, really difficult Christmas surge. You could activate all the same capacity that you use to issue viruses early in the year. You could get up to a quarter of a million or 300,000 a week. You can have all of those people done in the space of 4 or 5 weeks, and it would save you untold problems over Christmas into the new year.
We're moving very quickly. We're following the best clinical advice, and there is a minimum gap of 5 months required, and we're targeting 1.3 to 1.4 million people. We are doing that. However, Gav, it's very important that we don't fall into this seductive notion that boosters are the answer to everything. That if we just give everyone a booster vaccine, we can all forget that COVID exists. That is absolutely not the case.
It would be a huge help, though.
Well, it would be a help, and it is a help, which is why we're rolling it out so quickly. But there's a lot more has to happen, right? So flu vaccines, industry really needs to play its part, which unfortunately a lot of it isn't right now in terms of compliance with COVID passes. And then each one of us individually, we all have a role to play. And Gav, we've all done this before several times when these surges have happened. We're doing it again. We're seeing some very encouraging signs. For example, for the 85 and above, we're now seeing cases for about the last week and a half consistently fall, which is fantastic.
And you attribute that to boosters?
We attribute it to two things. We attribute it to boosters and people changing their behaviours. They know they're higher risk. They know they make up the majority of people who get very sick from this. So those two things. We're also encouragingly now for the 75 to 84 year old group, for about the last week and a half, we're seeing cases flatten. They're no longer going up for those two age groups, which is very positive.
Just one final question on boosters before I move on, because there's a few other bits and pieces. But we've a texter in from somebody who's in their 50s, and they got an AstraZeneca vaccine over 6 months ago. We know that AstraZeneca doesn't offer quite the same level of robust protection against Delta. They've recently had COVID. Now, it's not bad, but they're concerned about the waning immunity of their vaccine. Does the minister think that I will get an mRNA booster soon? Because I'm concerned the rest of my family got a Pfizer shot shot, they all tested negative for COVID after I tested positive. Is there any sign of there maybe being more boosters for those in the 50 to 60 bracket who got AstraZeneca, who we know are not quite as brilliantly protected as those who received other vaccines, and who might be worried about rising cases getting through to them?
NIAC are keeping this under constant review. And if NIAC believe that the case is there to be made, they will give that advice to NPHET, they'll give that advice to me, and we will look at that. But the advice we have right now and what the science is saying right now is for your listener who has called in, if they got their second boost, was it 3 or 4 months ago, then they are currently fully protected. So what we're seeing, Gav, is that for the medium to severe illness, they're not seeing much evidence of waning. So there is ongoing protection for that. Where they're seeing the evidence of waning after about 6 months or so is for the milder illness.
Okay. So this person who got their second vaccine over 6 months ago, that they, if it's only waning for mild illness, then this person ideally shouldn't be too badly affected if they were to be unlucky enough to get infected.
If they got their second vaccine more than 6 months ago, certain, and they're in their 50s, certainly that is a group of people who NIAC will be looking at. Right now, NIAC don't believe a third vaccine is necessary for that group, but it's something they're keeping under constant review.
I'm sure you've seen in today's Sunday Business Post an analysis by Seamus Coffey from UCC, who you know has been keeping an eye on the number of listings on RAP.ie, which might be an informal index, but nonetheless, it's the best real-time indicator we have for the number of people who are passing away. And it does seem that there are quite a number of excess deaths in the last couple of months, but more than can be attributed directly to COVID. And that raises the theory that maybe now, unfortunately, there are more people dying from illnesses that didn't get caught in time or who didn't get adequately treated than there actually are dying from the pandemic. Does that give you some cause to wonder whether the scale of restrictions in the last while was worth it?
I can't speculate as to why that might be. There might be an awful lot of reasons why that is happening. However, regardless of why it is happening, it is absolutely the case that an awful lot of non-COVID healthcare work has had to be delayed because of COVID. The we all focus on COVID, and we focus on COVID mortalities and COVID cases and COVID hospitalizations, but the vast majority of our healthcare system and our population is not being affected directly by that. It's being affected indirectly because of the cancellations. So a point I've made repeatedly, for example, we were up recently around 100 people in ICU, with about 2/3 of those beds being taken up by people who were unvaccinated. This quite small group now, probably less than 7%, who were unvaccinated. And if that group were to choose to get vaccinated, and I really hope they will, particularly coming into the winter, that frees up about 2/3 of those ICU beds. And what that means is that there are men, women and children who can get surgery, sometimes urgent surgery, that they need. It is absolutely the case that there has been a very serious impact on non-COVID healthcare because of COVID.
What is your pitch then to those who have held out this far, who have clearly had vaccines available to them but have opted not to take that up? Because if, as you say, all of us getting through a winter requires there to be as much available ICU capacity as possible, and that means not having an unvaccinated population taking up more than its proportion of beds, you know, they've resisted thus far. What would you say to them now? Why would they need to change their behaviour now if they've managed so far up to now?
Well, to protect themselves, first of all. So what we're seeing is a disproportionate number of unvaccinated people are ending up getting very sick. They're ending up in hospital. They're ending up in intensive care. So 7% of the population are making up 2 in every 3 COVID patients in ICU. So first of all, the science is absolutely clear on this, that this group is much more at risk than other people because they're unvaccinated. Secondly, they're protecting everybody else. Thirdly, they're protecting our healthcare workers and our healthcare capacity to treat other people. Ireland has been phenomenal. The people in Ireland have been phenomenal in terms of the uptake of the vaccines. You know, it's a country where we have a lot of social solidarity, and everybody getting vaccinated, including younger people who might feel that they're not too worried about themselves getting COVID because they're younger. They're taking the vaccine partly to make sure that their mums and dads and grannies and granddads and friends who might have underlying conditions get vaccinated. So what I'd say to that group that's now less than 7% is there's always, you know, there's always vaccines there, and please step up. It'll really help as we come into the winter months.
Given that that cross-generational solidarity you just mentioned and the high take-up of vaccines that there's been, do you have any theories or any guesstimates as to why our infection rate seems to be so much higher than other countries in Europe that don't have the same protection of vaccines as we do?
there are various reasons that have been given to me by the public health teams and by the people doing our modelling. One is our proximity to the UK. So consistently now, the UK for quite a long time has had a much higher caseload than we have. Now, actually, in the recent surge, we've overtaken them in the last few days. So our case rate is now higher than the UK. But if you were to take, you know, if you were to surround Germany or Italy or wherever it is with that much COVID, that many cases, inevitably it would have an effect. Okay. The second reason I was given is one of path dependency. In other words, we got high levels of Delta quicker than many others, again, because of our proximity to the UK.
And it's once it's out there seeding, that vaccines can only do so much.
Well, and behaviours can only do so much. That actually it's a very tricky virus because of our variant. It's so contagious that it's very tricky to push back down. Yet push it back down, we must and we will.
You this week got Dáil approval to extend the emergency powers, which give you the right to issue regulations as you and the government see fit to limit how we can move, how we gather, how we socialise and all the likes. You told the Dáil that in this extension now until February the 9th that will be the last time. Now, if those emergency powers were not to be renewed after February the 9th, that would mean no legal underpinning for rules on masks, no limitations on gatherings or what people can do or how they can socialise, no domestic use of vaccination passports at all. Can you guarantee for certain that after February 9 you won't need that?
I can't, and that's not what I said. What I said was that if we are to use them again, what we need is primary legislation. So when I brought in this legislation, I amended it so that there could only be one extension of the powers. We've just invoked that one extension of the powers. Powers like these, emergency powers like these, do not fit comfortably with me, with government, or I would say with anyone in the Oireachtas. They are emergency powers. They must be handled with care. And so one of the safety valves we have, or one of the checks we have on it, is this sunset clause. So if, I mean, please God, we won't, right? Mm. But if we do need powers, and they might be quite moderate things like ensuring people wear masks in public transport. Yeah. But if we do need a legislative basis for that, the point I was making was I'll have to introduce new legislation.
Is it that much more of a safeguard, though? Because one way or another, it still requires the Oireachtas to give its approval. And that's all there is right now. So doing it as an extension to one law or doing it as a renewal of a creation of another law, it doesn't really make that much of a difference, does it?
It does, yeah. The legislative process is much more rigorous than a vote on the Dáil. So what we needed last week under the Act was for both houses to vote for an extension. Mm. So it was a session in the Dáil and a session in the Seanad. The legislative process has much more involvement than that.
So you're satisfied that that's enough of a democratic safeguard to make sure that if they're still going to be fairly draconian powers, as you yourself have described them, that there'll be adequate reason for them to be in place?
Well, yes. I mean, the safeguard is the Oireachtas. So that is the legislative process. That applies for any of our laws.
Okay. I should have probably asked this earlier on, but just it's come in from a text and I wanted to go back to it about the suggestion that maybe vaccine impact is waning. And you mentioned that after 6 months, those who receive certain vaccines maybe are less protected from mild illness. If that's the case, is there any question about the vaccine passports that a lot of us have, the COVID certificate, of those expiring? Because if, for example, I got my second dose in August, and if there's now a fear that maybe the protection you get from that wanes after 6 months, there's an argument to be made that my certificate should expire after February or some other point. Is there any scope through which the certificates that people have could be effectively revoked?
It's not something that's been considered at the moment. But I think some other countries are looking at it. It's not something we're considering right now.
Not something that's on your agenda at all.
No.
On mention of how hospitals are going to cope with the winter and the need for vaccinated people to take up vaccines for themselves and for others, we are long overdue now the sight of the HSE's winter plan, which was supposed to entail the idea of them being able to scale up a lot of their capacity or to be able to deal with the surge of respiratory viruses that they are. It's now the 7th of November. We'll be in the second week of November tomorrow and still haven't seen that plan. Where is it?
Well, really, it was launched last year. So up until now, what happened was the measures that are required through winter were sort of brought in around November time and said, you know, November is here, so we need more beds, we need more staff, we need more whatever it is. Last year, we decided to do it fundamentally different and say winter happens every year. So let's figure out what we need and let's lock that into permanent capacity. So we launched last year a massive winter plan, €600 million. Lots more beds, lots more staff, lots more diagnostics, things like intervention teams to try and keep people out of emergency departments. The vast majority of that is locked in. So this month versus last month, or sorry, versus this month last year, we have about an extra 800 hospital beds. We have thousands of extra doctors, nurses and therapists. We have very broad access to diagnostics for GPs. We have these community support teams. So most of what is needed is now locked into permanent capacity. However, there are some extra things like more community intervention, palliative care, national ambulance service protocols, targeted more beds, for example, in Cork, more diagnostics in the acutes, a rollover of private capacity into January, February, March. So there are extra things that we're just working through the final details.
And to be fair, I don't think they should be glossed over, because sometimes you get a lot of commentary and people wondering back going, why haven't we done more to increase the capacity to make sure that ICU isn't full with COVID patients? And to be fair, there has been a lot of work which maybe doesn't get the credit that it deserves. And yet for all of that, and having basically been on a winter footing now for a year and heading into another winter, the figures for ICU yesterday showed that there were only 18 available beds, and there was only 278 available beds in general hospitals, despite probably the same numbers or more being on trolleys. So despite all of that work, hospitals are effectively still full.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. The hospitals are under an awful lot of pressure. There's no question. So this year, we're likely to have a wave of flu, which we didn't have last year. There are real issues around delayed care. And maybe some of that goes back to the analysis by Seamus Coffey. But what we are seeing is we're seeing older people present in emergency departments. They are sicker than they might have been in previous years. They need to be brought into the hospital, and their average length of stay can be somewhat longer.
What is the exit strategy for all of this? Because we know that we're going to be looking into a winter where there's going to be some limits on what the unvaccinated can do indoors, and that you might argue is for the greater good, even though a lot of those would argue that it's maybe at this point unnecessary. But there's talk about whether we should all be looking for third doses and whether it's the right thing to mass medicate society when it may not be necessary or it could be substitute for other things. But we would all like to go to a world where there is no more social distancing, where there's no need to worry about keeping your distance or wearing a mask in public transport, to go back to life as it was in February 2020. We don't seem to have any vision for how it is that we're going to achieve that.
We do. But first of all, let's just take stock of where we're at. So Ireland has done incredibly well. Now, you and me and your listeners, and we're always agitating to try and get back more and more and more to life as normal. But if you look at the measures that are currently in place, there's not many. You need a COVID pass to get into a pub or a restaurant. Mm. You've got to wear a mask in a hospital, on a bus or a train, in a shop, right? So there's actually very little in place from a legal basis. We have really good public health advice around hand washing and cough etiquette and so forth, that the vast majority of people agree with. So first of all, most things are pretty much back to normal. Now, we are in the middle of a pandemic. So the question really is there a plan for the coming months and through the winter? And the answer is yes, we have a very clear plan, and I believe it'll work. So there's a lot of measures I can walk you through that we're doing at a governmental level. As I said, industry really needs to step up. The recent ESRI data showing that there has been a significant reduction in compliance by hospitality is very worrying. And then each of us as individuals obviously has our part to play.
But we have a situation where everyone complies and we drive it down, and then we think, right, that's that beaten, and we go back to non-compliance because we think there's nothing to be scared of, and it comes back again. And I wonder that what do we do to break out of the cycle of waves and to actually say that this is behind us and there's no need for any restrictions or any aggressive preemptive behaviour forevermore?
Well, we'll have to see how it goes, but that question sort of wishes away COVID. I mean, COVID is here. COVID is going to be with us for a while. And we and everyone else around the world, we have to learn to live with it. But there are some very encouraging developments. So the booster vaccines, the vaccines, including the boosters, are more effective than anyone ever would have dreamt possible. You know, this time last year, maybe a little earlier last year, there were serious scientists who were saying based on vaccination programs for other diseases, we're saying it could be 5 or 6 years before we see a vaccine. You know, we have multiple vaccines that work very well. There's also
a year on and the hospitals are pretty much full.
They are, but there's also really exciting new drug therapies coming online. So Merck have just had one authorised in the UK. I know the EMA are looking at that. I was speaking to AstraZeneca recently. They've got one that they're looking to bring online in January. Pfizer has one as well. So the science and technology is evolving all the time to make this more and more manageable.
Loads more that I'd love to ask you, but I'm afraid we're completely out of time. Thanks very much for coming into studio this lunchtime. The Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, with us this lunchtime on The Record. Catching up with Bernard O'Toole about the weekend sport. And we're back after this.
On The Record, on News Talk,
brought to you by PwC. A community of solvers coming together in unexpected ways. It all adds up to the new equation.